once again, everybody. Thank you for joining me here in the Bettors Box. It's BangTheBook.com's MLB betting podcast, the May 29th edition, presented by DSI Sportsbook. If you head on over to DSI Sportsbook, use the promo code BTB Radio. It's good for a $10 free bet just for signing up and an additional 50 to 100% deposit bonus based on the amount of your initial deposit. A few things to take care of here before we get into today's show. Just want to remind you of our Monday, Tuesday, Thursday format. Coming up on tomorrow's show, we'll have Philip Rossman-Reich from OrlandoMagicDaily.com. He'll break down the NBA Finals with us between the Cleveland Cavaliers and the Golden State Warriors. Now we'll also preview some stuff here for the NBA offseason, which teams could take a step forward for next year, what will happen with the NBA draft, some of those things to plant some seeds in your mind for when season win totals come out and all of those other types of things. I'll have another edition of the Bettors Box coming up on Thursday, another one next Monday. No Tuesday takeover show next week. No Bettors Box on June 12th. Got some stuff coming up that I need to take care of. So a couple of minor format changes there for you, just for you to keep those in mind. Don't forget about my picks and analysis article every day over at bangthebook.com. Also, my daily fantasy piece goes up daily. I've got a preview of the Predators-Penguins Stanley Cup Finals. Game one preview is up. We've got all kinds of golf, NASCAR, UFC, boxing, surfing, all kinds of esports. Just tons of stuff going on over there at bangthebook.com. So please head over there and check that out. Of course, we also have our three contests that are still going on. Cash prizes available for the Daily Streaker contest, monthly pick of the day, and then also some stuff for the top monthly win percentage, top ROI, and top number of units won. No purchase necessary with those. Just sign up with an account over there at the website and get involved today. Before we dig into the meat and potatoes of today's show, I do want to take a couple of minutes here on this Memorial Day holiday to thank all of our servicemen and women out there for fighting for the freedoms that we get to enjoy on a daily basis. Of course, some gave the ultimate sacrifice. Those are the ones that we honor here today. But throughout all of the other days of the year, please make sure that you're thanking veterans, doing any special gestures that you can for them. And of course, a lot of those scars that happen overseas do come back with them. And there are many service personnel out there that need help on a daily basis. So if you have the opportunity to donate to any of the great organizations that are out there, perhaps something like WAGS for Warriors, you know, or any of the other donation funds that are out there, please do that. And also, you know, for those of you that have served, thank you so much for your service. For those of you that have loved ones or great friends that have served, thank you to you as well for being there for those people, both before they left, while they were gone, and of course, since they've come back. So, you know, on this Memorial Day holiday, a lot of us, you know, maybe watching baseball, going to baseball games, going to cookouts, all those types of things. But please take a couple of minutes to honor and remember the sacrifices, great men and women. So as far as today's show goes, we'll go beyond the box score. Then we'll look down the lines. I'll also give you what is the closest thing to a pick for Monday. Of course, with a bunch of day games, it's hard for me to give out anything that I really like with the lead time of today's show. But we'll do the best we can with that. Monday mailbag, got a couple of questions for that. And then we'll preview what I'm looking at here for the week ahead. So let's go ahead and get started with a look beyond the box score. One thing I want to mention here at the top of today's show, we've seen a lot of interesting totals results where we've seen things really piling up. In the month of May, from May 1st through the early games on May 24th, the over was 169 and 125. If you look at this weekend here that we just had, the under was 14-2 on Saturday. We had a doubleheader between the Tigers and the White Sox. So the under 14-2 in the 16 games on Saturday, but the over 10-2-3 on Sunday, which really goes against the grain because getaway days are often thought to be under types of days. You know, teams wrapping up series, players go out and do things on Saturday nights, all that type of stuff. But a lot of overs on Sunday, unders on Saturday. Unders this past week from Monday to Saturday, 52-25, and then of course the 10-2-3 overrun on Sunday. So does it mean anything? Probably not. Is it predictive of anything? No, not really. But what you want to keep in mind here is that more often than not, everything evens out. So when you get a big run of overs, unders are probably coming. You don't really want to handicap based on that premise, even though, you know, as I talk about here, we do try to eliminate variance, do try to pick some things here based on regression analysis. And when you get those major outliers of totals, some regression is certainly coming. But at the same time, handicap your games the right way, and you know, you'll find a way to be on the right side of those things more often than not. A few series to take a look at here. The White Sox take 3 out of 4 from the Detroit Tigers. Chicago White Sox, now, you probably haven't noticed this, and I don't blame you if you haven't. They have the best offense in Major League Baseball per WOBA, weighted on base average, against left-handed pitching. So when the White Sox face lefties, they're doing a lot of damage. When they face righties, though, they're having some issues. Now, of the 3 right-handers that they faced in this series, they beat one of them. That was Jordan Zimmermann. Actually, they beat 2 of them, Michael Fulmer and Jordan Zimmermann. Fulmer threw a complete game loss, so he pitched pretty well in that one, although only 4 swings and misses for Michael Fulmer in that game. So that'll be something to keep in mind here as we go forward. If he's not getting swings and misses, his margin for error is lower than a lot of other guys out there. So that'll be something I watch in his next couple of starts. But the White Sox struck out 11 times against Buck Farmer, who's been kind of a fringe 4A type of prospect for a while now, but he wound up pitching well in that game of the doubleheader there. I believe that was the 2nd game on Saturday. And then they blew out Jordan Zimmermann on Sunday. Everyone's blowing out Jordan Zimmermann right now. You can't fade him enough, but as we'll talk about later in the Down the Line segment, apparently the market didn't want to fade him there on Sunday. I was all about fading the Tigers on Sunday. For those that played that game from my picks analysis piece, I like the White Sox in that spot. It was a good situational play in my mind, and I think we're going to have some of those. You know, as I talked about in my piece yesterday, this is a Tigers team that's accustomed to winning. You know, they've been a contender. They've been at the top of the mountain for the Central Division for a while now. Now they're not. You know, they're behind the Indians. They're certainly behind the Twins now as well. And I think they honestly finished behind the White Sox. I think the Tigers finished 4th here in the American League Central when it's all said and done. And there are a few reasons why. I mean, for one thing, like I said, I think you can find situational spots to play against them. This is a very old team, both in the rotation and then also in the lineup. So there are a lot of guys that you just aren't going to have that bounce back ability that they once did. Ian Kinsler is hurt. Miguel Cabrera has been hurt off and on. Victor Martinez has become a shell of himself, especially from a power standpoint, just because injuries are wearing him down. Aging curves really take a toll on teams, and the Tigers are on the wrong side of a lot of them right now, especially in that lineup and then with some of those starters. I mean, even a guy like Justin Verlander, you know, who is a great pitcher, and we've seen pitchers have long and successful careers, but he's at the point now where he's past his prime. Had a Cy Young capable season last year. The innings workload built up. This year he's off to a slow start. Maybe there's something to that. But the Tigers are not a team I have a whole lot of interest in backing right now, and I don't think that that's going to change as we get into the dog days of summer. The Marlins took 2 out of 3 from the Angels here. Matt Shoemaker with a setback on Sunday with a rough outing for him allowed the Marlins to win the series. Marlins' offense has gotten going, but they've still got some consistency issues in the bullpen. David Phelps is back now, which is a good help for them. But Kyle Barraclough really struggling over his last few appearances. His ERA up around 4 now, and he's way too talented of a reliever to have something like that. But the big story for the Angels here coming out of this series is that Mike Trout is heading for an MRI on his sprained left thumb. We'll see if it's something more than that. But you look at Trout's numbers this year, .337 average, .461 on base, .742 slugging percentage. Nobody else in the Sunday lineup for the Angels had a slugging percentage over .400 at the end of the game. And Albert Pujols wasn't in the lineup. His slugging percentage isn't at .400 either. So the Angels' offense could take a massive step back without Trout. That goes without saying, but I'll be curious to see how their lines are adjusted with Trout out of the equation. Something we talked about a little bit with Freddie Freeman and the Braves, where you know, he probably saw about a 15 to 20 cent move, something like that, for Trout. Could be even more significant. And like I said, I think Freeman is the most important singular player to his own respective team, but man, you could make a really significant case for Mike Trout, especially because J.C. Ramirez is the only reliable starter right now for the Angels. Shoemaker's up and down. Nolasco's not very good. They've got some guys that are hurt. You know, they lost Andrew Heaney for a while. Garrett Richards is out. So the Angels are really in a sad state of affairs right now. I honestly don't know how this team is close to .500. I really don't know. The Marlins are a team that you may want to look to back here in their next several games. They're 12 games under .500 right now. They've taken on a lot of sharp money, and the sharp players have gotten burned by them a little bit. I wonder if now is the time to jump back on. The top 6 in the lineup, very good. The pitching staff has had some problems. The rotation's not particularly strong. They've got some filler guys out there. But I think the bullpen's going to normalize a little bit. They've got some starters that are coming around, some starters that are due for a little bit of positive regression. So it wouldn't surprise me if the Marlins do go on a little bit of a run here over the next little while. Diamondbacks and the Brewers split their four-game series. That was one that I was really interested in. A couple of top dogs here in the division. I mean, Colorado does lead the AL or the NL West, excuse me, but the Diamondbacks are up there. The Brewers lead the National League Central, which is kind of remarkable. But two high-quality offenses here played three of four games under until Sunday's over. So the totals market been pretty volatile, as I mentioned already. Really, overall, the MLB markets have been volatile, and I'll talk about that here in a few minutes. But how about the Milwaukee starting pitchers in this series? Zach Davies, 6 innings, 7 hits, 3 runs, all earned, couple walks, couple strikeouts. He had the worst start by far for the Brewers in this series, and it was still a quality start. Now, again, a quality start, the bare minimum is a 4.50 ERA with 3 earned over 6. So, you know, yeah, you can debate the merits of whether or not it is actually a quality start, but with the Brewers' offense, I would say it's plenty good enough more often than not. Junior Guerra comes off the DL to throw 5 2/3, 3 hits, 1 run. It was earned, 3 walks, 5 strikeouts. How about the 2 weekend starters for the Brewers here? Chase Anderson, 7 innings, 1 hit, did not allow a run, walked 3, struck out 11. Jimmy Nelson, 7 innings, 7 hits, 1 earned, no walks, 10 strikeouts on Sunday. Now, Nelson did pitch with a big lead, so he was able to attack the zone, not worry about some mistakes. But still, this was an Arizona offense that came into this series leading the league in WOBA against right-handed pitching. They faced 4 right-handed starters in this series and scored 5 runs. Now, sure, they had 18 hits, but they only scored 5 runs there, drew 8 walks, struck out 28 times. So that's something you really want to consider here. I talk about this all the time, looking for those outliers that are out there and expecting some regression to the mean. I would think that the Diamondbacks will run into some issues here against right-handed pitching over the next little while, much like they did in this series, just because no one's going to carry a 360 WOBA, you know, against right-handed pitching when you face a righty for about 70 to 75% of your plate appearances. It's just not going to happen. So, again, look for those outliers. Try to look to play against them because I think you'll have some success with that. One thing I do want to mention here about this series, Zach Greinke gave up 5 runs in 5 1/3 on 5 hits, but he had 25 swings and misses in 5 1/3 innings. That is an absurd number. A lot of times guys will be somewhere in the 12 to 15 range. If you have a really good day, you'll strike out 20 or you'll get 20 swings and misses. Zach Greinke with 25 in 5 1/3. So BABIP luck not on his side, sequencing luck not on his side. Make sure that you're applying context to bad outings because not all of them are created equal. And you mentioned that with 25 swings and misses. And I know the Brewers swing and miss a ton. I mean, it just comes with the territory for them. That's an insane number in 5 1/3 innings of work. So Greinke, yeah, gave up 5 runs on 5 hits. Yeah, he's had a couple of rough outings here of late, but the stuff is still good. If you get 25 swings and misses, I don't care who you're facing. I don't care if you're facing a triple-A lineup. If you get 25 and 5 1/3, your stuff is good. It's just a matter of giving up hits at inopportune times. You did give up a home run there in that game. Was a solo shot. But that's what it is. You know, it's a game of sequencing. You give up 5 hits, but you give them up at the wrong times. You give up, like, back-to-back doubles or 3 straight extra base hits or something. You know, that can really skew your line. So just keep that in mind here when you're looking at really bad outings for guys, and there are going to be some throughout the year. Even the best pitchers just sometimes don't have it. Greinke had it, but the sequencing gods weren't on his side there in that one. Want to talk about a couple of team trends here before we get into the down the line segment. Want to talk about defense for a second. I haven't talked too much about defense here on the show, in large part because stats like defensive runs saved, there's a lot of noise, a lot of volatility right now, because the sample sizes aren't all that great. But let's look at last year's top 5 in defensive runs saved. You had the Cubs, who were historically good, 82 defensive runs saved last year. They were absolutely phenomenal. The Astros were 2nd with 51. Giants were 3rd with 50. Red Sox at 48. Angels at 31. Now, again, that's a plus-minus system. It is tracked by hand, so there is some human error in there. It's a Baseball Info Solutions statistic. Obviously, we're getting better with defense with the advent of StatCast, But for now, we have defensive runs saved and UZR that are really going to be the primary ones for us to look at. But let's look at the top five for this year. Number one in defensive runs saved, the Minnesota Twins. Now, I talked about this last week. Pecota was projecting some really significant defensive gains for the Twins. They've come through, and here are the Twins leading the Central Division. Now, I don't think that they'll be there when it's all said and done, but they're off to a great start defensively here with 31 defensive runs saved. Defense is a big reason why they're off to the start that they are. Similarly, the Cincinnati Reds, 30 defensive runs saved for them, off to a much better start than expected. A lot of people thought they'd be one of the worst teams in baseball. Well, they're hovering around 500 right now. Defense, a big reason why. Tampa Bay Rays, they're third with 26 defensive runs saved. Texas Rangers are fourth with 16, so a big gap between the top three and then four and five. And, of course, the Rangers, you know, obviously playing pretty well right now with that 10-game winning streak that they had dating back to last week. And then, you know, again, still hovering around 500 in what is a pretty weak AL West. And then the Houston Astros are fifth. Again, not a big surprise there. Top five from last year, as I mentioned, that's the Cubs, Astros, Giants, Red Sox, and Angels. The Cubs are seventh. Now, they're a little bit above league average in defensive runs saved. I think they're at like seven, something like that, or five. But it's a big drop from last year. And when you consider some of the pitching issues that they've had, that's what you can point to. When you look at the Cubs from last year, a lot of low ERAs and higher xFIPs. And by higher xFIPs, I mean 360, 370, 380. But they had guys with 280 ERAs. That was because they were so good defensively. This year, you're seeing that script get flipped a little bit because they're not so much of an outlier defensively. Their pitchers, higher ERAs, similar peripherals, and of course the Cubs' offense has been a little bit inconsistent this year. But that's really part of the reason why they have this appearance of being a struggling team, is just because defensively they've dropped off so much because of some of the losses that they had from last year. And then, of course, they just had a remarkable season defensively. I mean, everything lined up for them last year. And now that they're back to being more of an average defensive, we're seeing what's happening with some of their performances. The Astros were second last year. They're fifth this year. Again, they're off to a great start. The Giants were third last year. They are 26th this year. So some significant defensive drop-off for the Giants, along with an offensive drop-off. That's why they've been one of the worst teams in baseball here so far this season. The Red Sox were fourth last year. They're 11th this year. I talk about this as well. Their offense is struggling quite a bit. They're not doing very well from a sequencing standpoint. Their home run to fly ball rate, one of the lowest in the league. Add in these defensive shortcomings. That's why you've got a Red Sox team that's been a little bit of an underachiever here so far. Angels, as I mentioned, were fifth. They are 21st this year. A lot of that from last year, though, driven by Andrelton Simmons. And sometimes you just have that one individual outlier. But again, it's still a volatile statistic, but there is an additional level of stabilization with each passing day. So as you're looking at those defensive metrics, maybe to play totals or whatever else, you can look at some of those things and see where you can maybe find some edges out there in the marketplace. One other thing I wanted to mention in terms of some team trends or statistics to pay attention to, the teams that have big fly ball increases or decreases. Now, I've talked about this a lot, and people have kind of asked some questions here to me about the home run boom in Major League Baseball and asking if the ball is juiced, if steroids are back, all that type of thing. Really, it's just a conscious effort from hitters to increase their launch angles and hit the ball out of the ballpark. You also have the whole thing of the pitchers providing the power with velocity being higher than it's ever been. But some teams that have made some significant strides here from a fly ball percentage standpoint. Now, this is percentage of balls in play that are hit in the air. Now, keep in mind, this also includes pop-ups and stuff like that. But the Oakland A's have gone from 36.4% to 41.7%. Yonder Alonso and Jed Lowry are a big reason why. Both of those guys hitting a lot more fly balls. Lowry's having one of his best offensive seasons. Alonso's got a power increase. Now, you have to understand here that fly balls are great because they mean home runs. But also they mean more outs. You know, ground balls will find holes more often than fly balls will. So it's kind of a boom or bust type of thing for some of these teams where they're going to hit more dingers, but they're going to have fewer base runners because, you know, we see these pitchers all the time that are high fly ball guys carrying 220, 225 BABIPs. So for the A's, that's a big reason why they're an inconsistent team. When they hit home runs, they're going to fare pretty well. When they don't have a lot of base runners, it's hard for them to score runs. They suck defensively. So they're kind of a really high variance team, and that's why I've had a problem trying to get a pulse for them here throughout the season. The New York Mets are up about 2.5 or up about 3% from 38.5 to 41.6, so a lot more fly balls for them. Seattle Mariners up 4% in the fly ball category, so maybe some more power gains coming for the Mariners as we go forward. A couple of teams that are down, the Toronto Blue Jays are down from 37% to 34.7%. Few reasons for this. Edwin Encarnacion is gone. Josh Donaldson has been hurt, and Donaldson hits for a lot of power. Troy Tulowitzki's been out. Russell Martin's been out. I think the Blue Jays offensively are a team where you can look to play some team total overs with them now that they're healthy once again. I think they hit some more fly balls, hit for some more power. So that's an angle that we can look at here over the next few weeks. And then the Boston Red Sox are down 1.6% from 34.8 to 33.2. As I mentioned, their home run to fly ball rate is a little bit low. They'll start hitting for a little bit more power as things warm up, I would think. But again, guys are actively trying to change their launch angle. So it's not a surprise to see some of the teams have dropped off, struggling to score runs. The Marlins and Braves, low fly ball percentages, they're having trouble scoring runs. The Brewers are actually the third lowest, which is kind of stunning to me given some of the power that they have. But they've got some speed guys that hit the ball on the ground. They've got some guys that hit some line drives out there. So the Brewers are kind of bucking the trend a little bit in terms of being a decent offense with a low fly ball percentage. But overall, you can look at this trend, and it's something that will follow in successive seasons as well, where guys are actively trying to hit more home runs and see what kind of impact it has both on team performance and also totals. All right, so let's go down the lines here, look at a few line moves that we've seen since I was last in the air on Thursday. On Friday, we saw a Masahiro Tanaka fade. Tanaka was phenomenal in that start, actually, but the A's snuck in a late winner. The market took notice that Tanaka had been struggling. He comes out, throws a gem. I'll be curious to see what happens with his line here in the middle of the week this week. Saw money come in against A.J. Griffin and on Mike Bolsinger. Probably a Rangers fade, a Griffin fade as well. Toronto getting healthier. That was another thing, too, was Toronto was getting Josh Donaldson and Troy Tulowitzki back for that game. So that's one thing to keep in mind here, too. We're seeing a lot of ERA to XFIP moves out there in the market, and we will throughout the season. But lineup changes are having a big impact as well, because everybody that moves markets now, the sharp players that are out there that move the markets, they're all modelers. So they put in a lineup and they get an expected outcome, an expected number of runs scored, an expected final score, however you want to term it. And when you get some of these lineup changes, we could be talking about 1% to 2% difference, maybe more. And you're going to see that show up out there in the betting market. So you're going to see some of those moves that are lineup-based more so than pitcher-based. I think what you want to look for is you want to look at the timing of the line move. If it's an overnight move or an early morning move, that's on the pitcher. If it's a move in the afternoon, that's on the lineup, because the model guys are reassessing what the values are for the game based on the matchups. And then when you see a lineup, when you put it together and you spit out an expected outcome, we'll see a second wave of moves. So really that's what you want to do. You want to look for moves on the overnights and early morning, and then in the afternoon as teams start to release their lineups. Really stunned to see money come in on Yovani Gallardo for Seattle against Eduardo Rodriguez for Boston. The Mariners are not good against left-handed pitching, and Eduardo Rodriguez is a guy that I'm going to look to back here over his next several starts. He's been really good. And he's overshadowed in that Boston rotation by names like David Price, who's coming back today, and also by a guy like Rick Porcello, the reigning Cy Young Award winner. I don't think people realize how good Eduardo Rodriguez has been basically since last June. And he's left-handed, so you got the unfamiliar lefty angle. I think that prices have been off with him. I don't think that he is adequately valued in the marketplace. So Eduardo Rodriguez is a guy on the overnights that I would look to back. Maybe he was adequately valued because, there was such a move against him. I don't know, maybe the numbers are a little bit inflated. But I think the market's trying to figure out how to handle him, and I don't think that they're doing it correctly right now. Market came in on Antonio Senzatella and the Rockies against St. Louis and Carlos Martinez. It worked, but I'm kind of surprised to see that. I sort of figured Senzatella would be a regression candidate for a lot of people, would be a fade guy. Wasn't in that spot. Maybe it was a play against the Cardinals. I'm not sure. But I think we'll have a chance to go against Senzatella here this week, and I'll talk about that later in the show. Saturday, Gerard Eichhoff finally got us a good start. He was a winner. His money came in against him to back Bronson Arroyo. That was one that we were on in my picks analysis piece. As a general overall statement here regarding line moves, so many pitching changes and other things this weekend, it was hard to gauge the market, guys getting rests, different stuff like that. The 10-day disabled list is making it really hard. You know, we're getting a lot of 4A starting pitchers, spot starters. Some good pitchers are hurt right now, like Bumgarner, like Kluber, like Paxton, like, hell, the list goes on and on. It's just been tough out there in the marketplace this year. It has been one of the most unique baseball seasons that I've seen so far, and I was kind of wondering, you know, what the 10-day disabled list would do. But it's kind of like in college basketball with the shot clock going down from 35 seconds to 30 seconds. You have to make some adjustments, but you also have to see what happens and see what you need to adjust. And with baseball this year, the 10-day disabled list, roster manipulation, just a bad year for injuries, it's been really, really challenging, especially to keep up with some of these line moves and handicap some of these pitchers and all that. So hopefully we've been able to help a little bit here on this show. But if you're frustrated with the baseball season, I can certainly see why. Saw money come in on Dallas Keuchel to fade Wade Miley. That's not surprising at all. Money came in against the Giants and Ty Block. Money came in on Mike Foltynewicz and the Braves in that start. Block has some really ugly peripherals. I think he's one of the lowest rated National League starters for a lot of bettors, almost like the National League's version of Dylan Covey. So don't be surprised if money keeps coming in against him. Sunday, we saw a lot of lineup-driven moves. Paul Goldschmidt for Arizona, no Francisco Lindor for Cleveland. Those were things that kind of affected the markets a little bit. Saw a big fade of Andrew Cashner, who, again, avoided the regression monster. He will find him very soon, I promise you that. Saw money come in against Matt Harvey in Sunday Night Baseball. That's probably a publicly driven narrative fade. You know, Harvey's been the subject of a lot of talk here for a lot of different reasons, none of them good. And he wound up pitching really well in that game last night. So, you know, we'll see what happens with the Mets here as they go forward and with some of the line moves on Harvey. I won't be rushing to back him by any means, but that was interesting to see that line move there as people just wanted action. I mean, no NHL playoffs, no NBA playoffs, long weekend. People are going to stay up and watch the game. They opted to side with Pittsburgh, and it didn't work out for them. One other line move of note on Sunday, Miguel Gonzalez was faded against the Tigers as people backed Jordan Zimmermann. I will not back Jordan Zimmermann at any point this season because he's awful. And again, that was a situational spot. I don't think people really paid attention to the situational spot there for that one. I mean, that was a doubleheader on Saturday. Detroit playing a day game, aging roster. Didn't seem like they'd care too much about a spot like that. And as it turns out, they didn't. They didn't draw any walks in that game, did nothing offensively, and Zimmermann got shelled. All right, so looking at some line moves here for Monday. Money coming in against Irvin Santana. That is very obvious. Left on base percentage above 90%. BABIP under 150 coming off of a complete game shutout. All of those things are signs of regression. And Irvin Santana is getting faded out there for a good reason. Rich Hill taking on some money today. This is both a Mike Leake fade and also the market not overreacting to Rich Hill's bad start against the Cardinals last week. Leake, high left on base percentage, low BABIP, low ERA, higher XFIP. Again, these are just moves that you already know to look for. Mariners taking money here today. I think the market sort of feels like they're getting disrespected a little bit. That's a weird pitching matchup in that game anyway. But I think the market's going to latch on to teams like that, where teams that, you know, aren't playing real well or have, like the Marlins. I mean, the Mariners were basically without their entire starting rotation outside of Giovanni Gallardo for a while there. So nobody paid attention to them. People wanted to look to fade them. No one's going to bet Christian Bergman or Chase DeJong or whoever the hell else they throw out there. Now the market thinks that they're underpriced, and I can see why. I mean, it's just one of those things. Totally disagree with the Giants' money coming in against the Nationals. Matt Moore, not good. Nationals kill left-handed pitching. Lots of high exit velocity contact against Matt Moore. Maybe this is a fade of Tanner Roark, who has not pitched all that well here recently, but I did a pretty deep dive on Roark in that picks analysis piece, so please check that out to get some more information there for that one. Money coming in on Matt Garza. That's the Brewers against the Mets. Mets coming off Sunday Night Baseball. Not a big surprise to see that move. Robert Gsellman not getting a whole lot of love out there in the market. I can see why. The stats don't look very good for him. I talked about that game a little bit there in that picks analysis article as well. So as far as tonight goes, I guess the closest thing I would have to a play, and this is not a strong play at all, would be the Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim. Now, they're going to be without Mike Trout, and I already talked about how bad their lineup looks without him, but they're facing Julio Teheran, Braves out on the West Coast. They've been out there for a few days now. They haven't had a day off since May 11th. I just think the Braves are a tired team. Teheran, big injury concerns, not pitching well, not locating well. Angels, you know, long trip back home, so, you know, I mean, it's just not a good day, really, I don't think, to find a whole lot that's out there, especially for the purposes, you know, of this article, because, you know, we've got so many day games out there today. Yeah, it's not a great spot for Anaheim by any means coming back from Miami, but, you know, I think just because I'm looking to fade Julio Teheran, it's the closest thing that we've got, but I think overall, unless you find some stuff to play during the day, and there is some stuff in that picks analysis piece, I just don't think there's a whole lot worth looking at for tonight. I'll make up for it with my look ahead here at a play that I really like for Wednesday. But our Monday mailbag segment here got a couple of questions. The first one coming from at Justin Strizek on Twitter. Why is the even run prop getting plus juice? Do we see a lot more games end in odd run totals? At what point do you play even? This is an odd question, if you'll pardon the pun there. I'm just speculating here because I've never actually seen any data on this. And if somebody wants to scrape some of this data, please let me know. But my thought process would be that there's usually an odd number of innings played, you know, because you're going to have, you've got nine innings, obviously. So people are going to go, that's not an odd number. That's 18. Yes, I get that. But you're going to get 17 and a half innings more often than not, because the bottom of the ninth not going to be played, especially in games where you've got a home favorite. And there's a lot of those. So that's what my guess would be, why we see an odd run total, because more often than not, you're going to have zero or one run scored in an inning. If you look at the run expectancy matrices and all that, you know, it favors the chances of one run or no runs. So that would be my guess, is that because you generally get 17 and a half innings, you're going to have one run or no runs. That's probably why you see a little bit of juice on the odd number for runs in a game. I don't know if there's really anything to exploit in a market like that, but it was an interesting question, one that I've never really thought about, but I didn't really have an answer for him at first, and now that I kind of thought about it a little bit more, it's probably just because, you know, of the number of times you get teams to come up to bat, you know, and just that it lends itself to an odd number of runs scored. Maybe somebody's done the data on it, I don't know, but that would be my thought. You know, you've got 18 innings, 18 chances to go to the bat or go to the plate in a nine inning game, but you're not going to have the bottom of the ninth. So you go down to 17. And you know, that's probably what my thought is there with that. And then he also went on to ask, would assume even is more likely in higher scoring games. I have no idea. Maybe, you know, I don't really know if anyone wants to scrape that data and let me know, please feel free. But an interesting question, to be sure. I mean, it's really not a market that I've tried to dabble in at all. But, hey, if anybody's found an edge out there in that market, I'd love to hear it. Because anytime we can get an edge on something that, you know, has a low handle and probably isn't a very efficient line, I'm all about it. At Butch Wolfthorn on Twitter says, on a show, what about discussing the minus 1.5 bet and first five bets? Sure, why not? We can go ahead and do that here on today's edition of the Bettors Box. So I did a past comparison from a question that my good buddy at Jimmy Doomhands asked about the run line versus the puck line. That was something I talked about in one of the early shows here back in April. And what I found is that there's a much higher percentage of one goal games in the NHL than the percentage of one run games in Major League Baseball. So if we look at this season so far, we've had 745 games played, 249 of them have ended in a one run margin of victory. So that's 33.4% of the games so far. Now, of course, obviously that's not one-run games won solely by the favorite or solely by the home team or however you want to say it. So, you know, about, you know, a third of the games are going to end in a one-run margin, at least if that trend stays for the rest of the season here. And if I get more time, I'll try to go back and look at some past seasons as well. But in terms of minus 1.5 strategies, I think there are a couple of things you can do. Clearly, you can take the favorite going against a team with a bad bullpen. You know, I mean, the Phillies get blown out a lot. You know, there are some teams that just have really bad bullpens that just get blown out a lot. I mean, it is what it is. The other angle I think you can look at, and this is one that's probably going to be a little bit more under the radar, is if you look to play the minus 1.5 on a favorite going against a team with a top-heavy bullpen. Chicago White Sox would be a good example here. Because a lot of times what you get with some of these marginal middle-of-the-road teams is that they win a lot of their close games because they've got good, you know, primary relievers. Anthony Swarzak's been terrific. Tommy Conley's been great. David Robertson's been excellent. So the White Sox are going to win their fair share of close games. But because of the strength of their starting rotation, which isn't a whole lot, they're going to lose a lot of games by more than one run. So I think you can look for that angle as well. Maybe the Rockies are another example with Adam Ottavino and Greg Holland. You know, if you're a manager and you're down by a run in the seventh or eighth inning or whatever, you're not trotting out your primary guys because you want to save them for when you have leads. So, you know, with the Rockies with Bud Black, if they're down a run in the seventh inning, and obviously crazy shit can happen at Coors Field, so keep that in mind. But if the Rockies are down a run, they're not using Adam Ottavino. They're not using Greg Holland. They're going to use other guys. They're going to try and cobble it together and say, hey, give us a scoreless inning, give us a chance. Sometimes that just doesn't happen. You look at the Cleveland Indians, for example, Andrew Miller and Cody Allen are only going to pitch when they have the lead. Andrew Miller has come in, I think, once maybe when they've been behind in a game this year, maybe twice. Cody Allen will not come in at all when they're trailing in a game this year. So you've got managers that want to save their relievers for chances when they have to win ball games. So if you've got a minus 1.5 opportunity, you know, in a game where you've got a top heavy bullpen, a good bullpen, but it's top heavy because, you know, the sample size is skewed. You know, guys are pitching in high leverage roles with leads. Other guys are going to pitch, you know, down by a run. You're going to get the fourth or fifth best reliever, maybe sixth best reliever in that game because the team doesn't have the lead. So that's a good chance to take a shot on the run line there and maybe get lucky a little bit, get some of those insurance runs. Those can be demoralizing for a team as well. So I don't know if it's more of a minus 1.5, you know, pregame run line strategy or a live betting strategy, but that is something that you can look at. One other thing I would talk about here in the NHL versus Major League Baseball is that in the NHL, almost on principle alone, if I'm getting a plus 1.5 at plus money, I'm going to play it. Because there are a lot of one-run games in the NHL. In Major League Baseball, not so much. So I don't think there's nearly as much equity in playing the plus 1.5 in Major League Baseball. I think you want to look for spot plays on the minus 1.5 and go about it that way. Now, as far as the first five innings goes, pretty self-explanatory. Obviously, you're just handicapping the first five innings. You'll have pushes in there, which you wouldn't have for a full game line. But I think the first five market makes a lot of sense. Because I feel like I'm much stronger at handicapping starting pitchers. Bullpens are volatile. You don't know how managers are going to deploy their relievers. You know who is starting. You don't know who's going to come in relief. Lots of stupid managerial decisions out there. You know, when you look at the first five records, it's not a big surprise. Teams with great rotations are good in the first five. Teams with great offenses are good in the first five. Everybody else kind of in between. If you got a bad rotation, you're not going to fare well in the first five innings. So there's some additional chalk to be put in there. If you've got a minus 160 for a full game, but you got a clear starting pitcher advantage, the first five is probably going to be minus 175, minus 180. That's just what it is. It's up to you to determine if you want to lay that. It's just a concept of bankroll management and philosophy and all that. But I think the first five, I think there's a lot of value to it. You know, for both first five totals and also first five money lines, just because you know who's starting. There are no surprises with that. You take the bullpens out of the equation. You don't have to worry about bullpen usage, any of that stuff. Just take the bullpens out of the equation and go toe-to-toe with the starters. And you can play splits at that point. Yeah, because splits are great. You know, if you've got a team that's really good against lefties like the White Sox, maybe they don't face a lefty in the late innings. And that puts them at a disadvantage because they can't hit right-handed pitching. But early on in a game, if they're facing a left-handed starter, you know that. You can handicap for that. You can account for that. So you can probably find a little bit of a bigger edge in that situation. So what am I looking at here for the week ahead? Well, one general point to make here is to watch out for tired teams. I mentioned possibly looking to fade the Braves tonight because they haven't had an off day since May 11th. Teams play a lot from mid-May to early June and then from mid-June to the All-Star break. For example, I think the Indians play 28 games in 28 days or 27 games in 28 days, something like that. Going to the All-Star break because they've got a makeup game or a doubleheader. It's one of those two things. But that happens here at this time of the year. You know, the schedule is front-loaded with days off to accommodate for bad weather. You've got the All-Star break in there. You know, you get some days off in September because the MLB wants teams at their best, you know, when they're heading into those playoff situations. So you're going to see that a lot here as you go throughout the season, where you're going to see teams that, you know, play a long stretch of games. There's a lot of travel. Pitchers are going every 5 days. They're not getting those extra days of rest in there. So maybe the pitcher has a shorter leash, or maybe with 100 pitches, you know, in his next start, he's going to struggle a little bit. So watch out for that. Look at the schedule overall. Try to find some of those spots here over the next 6 weeks where teams are just playing day after day after day without a day off. Houston and Minnesota, kind of looking at this series a little bit. Brad Peacock, Irvin Santana today. Mike Fiers, Jose Berrios on Tuesday. Joe Musgrove, Hector Santiago on Wednesday. Astros are just hammering teams right now. The only team they've had trouble with this year is the Indians. Twins are playing well. Twins avoid Dallas Keuchel and Lance McCullers in this series, but I still think that they don't have huge pitching edges here. Really want to see how Berrios does on Tuesday there against another good lineup. He's taken on the Indians and the Orioles already. Now he gets another good one in Houston. Big start for him. I want to see if he can keep this trend going. Oakland and Cleveland, the rare four-gamer between these two teams at Progressive Field, opens up today. Daniel Megden, Carlos Carrasco. Carrasco's a big favorite there in that one. Sonny Gray, Trevor Bauer on Tuesday. Sean Manaea, Mike Clevenger on Wednesday. Jarrell Cotton and the return of Corey Kluber on Thursday. The Indians are going to be interesting to me here in this series because this is a team that, I've talked about this before, they just look like they don't care. They seem very apathetic to me. You know, I don't know. I mean, there's been a lot of sequencing things that have kind of anchored their personalities a little bit. They've not gotten outs when they've needed to. They've not gotten hits when they've needed to. Their BABIP with runners in scoring position is atrocious. Finals fever is about to take over Cleveland. Of course, the NBA Finals begin Wednesday night. The Cavs and Indians have kind of fed off of each other a little bit here as the two primary sports teams in the city. The Browns, you know, obviously people talk about them in the fall, but for now they're kind of an afterthought with all the stuff that's going on. They've been rebuilding basically since they came back in 99. So you have a situation here where these two teams are kind of feeding off of each other a little bit. And now you've got the Cavs in the finals. You've got the Indians hoping to flip the switch a little bit in the month of June. This is a big series for them. They've not played well at home. They're starting a road trip where they go to Kansas City and Denver, and then they come back home for six. So this is a big series for them. They've got some winnable games here in this one. I think the pitching matchups are very interesting. And it's one of those things where the park factor really favors Cleveland. They're going to get three righties in this series, so they're going to have all their switch hitters batting left-handed. Progressive Field is much better to right field. The park factor, much, much better for right-handed hitter or for left-handed hitters, excuse me. Oakland is predominantly right-handed. So the park plays up for lefties, plays relatively neutral. It's a little bit above average for righties there, but the high wall in left field, ball carries better out to right field. So this is a chance for Cleveland to get it going. They get some interesting arms, but see, what's going to happen in this series is if the Indians play well, let's say they take three out of four or hit the jackpot and sweep this series, people are going to say, well, they should. But Gray, Manaea, and Cotton are three guys they don't see a whole lot, guys that have plus secondary stuff. It's an interesting series for them. So this is one that I'm really watching closely to see if they have that capability to flip the script, if they have that chance to get a little bit of momentum going. I guess this is a really big series for Cleveland. Is it a make-or-break series? No, not at all. They're not that far behind Minnesota, and they're a much better team than the Twins are. But still, as it warms up in Cleveland, you're going to see some high-scoring games. We should see the Indians start to come around a little bit, and I wonder if maybe this is the spot that it happens. Seattle and Colorado, 2-2 split here with a home-and-home. Sam Gaviglio, Tyler Chatwood on Monday. Ariel Miranda, Tyler Anderson on Tuesday. Antonio Senzatella, James Paxton on Wednesday. Kyle Freeland, Giovanni Gallardo Thursday. I will fade Antonio Senzatella in that start on Wednesday. James Paxton's first start back off the DL. I've talked about that before, that I don't like to back guys coming off the DL. It's either a stay away or a fade situation. However, Senzatella is in line to get shelled in this start, I think. Good left-handed power for Seattle. You know, start at Safeco Field where he's never pitched before. There's kind of a comfort level for these guys when they go to places they've pitched before. Senzatella is facing an American League lineup, so an extra hitter out there. I just think everything sets up well to fade Colorado there. You've got the travel from Denver to Seattle. You know, so I think everything sets up really nicely for a Paxton play there on Wednesday. I don't know what that line is going to look like with him coming off the DL, but I would get in on it early because, like I said, the sharp market's kind of been backing Seattle a little bit, thinks that they've been a little bit disrespected out there. So you want to get out in front of that line move just in case things don't work out in our favor. But that should be an interesting series there because Seattle starting to get a little bit healthier. They're getting Paxton back now. Felix is getting closer. And we'll see if Smiley ever winds up making it. But they're starting to get a little bit healthier from a starting pitching standpoint. Maybe that'll be something that really benefits them. So again, coming up tomorrow on our Tuesday Takeover show, we'll hear from Philip Rosenreich of Orlando Magic Daily to break down the NBA Finals and also do a little bit of a look ahead for the NBA offseason, see if we can find some teams that could be a little bit under the radar going into next season. And then we'll be on the air with another better edition of the Bettors Box on Thursday. That'll do it for today. Thank you so much for listening, everybody. And remember that you will never strike out when you're in the Bettors Box.